10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Hyland, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, I feel like I've gone back in time and or gone full circle in my adult college football life.
Please expand.
So when I was a younger man in a younger marriage with younger kids, we used to do, I would do two games a year, every year at Penn State. It was one trip with the family and one trip with my friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kids get older, things get complicated. That all stopped for a period of like, whatever, 7, 8, 9 years or whatever. Now that Jack is a freshman there, we are back to the two games a year thing with the same formula of like one trip with the kids, one trip without them. We shared a house with three families from our town who have also have kids up there this year as freshmen. It was an amazing weekend, Mike. The house was like the perfect location. You could see the stadium from our house, 10-minute walk to our tailgating spot. You could like actually go home if you wanted to, and like tune into the games, other games, and then go walk back to the tailgate, which is amazing. Weather was absolutely perfect. And I just feel like the next few years is going to be like, this will be our new reality now. And I'm kind of enjoying it, Mike.
Big asterisk though, two games a year. You did not go to the game, correct?
No. I mean, we could have at some point, but me and Aaron were very comfortable in, well, Aaron, as a Phillies fan, wanted to go home and see the Phillies game. So I could go for that, right? But you know, I could have if I wanted to, but tickets were very expensive, Mike. Very expensive.
Yes, I know. You're now entering a third phase. You said you've come full circle, but now maybe it's a third phase of where you're just too old and grumpy to even want to go to the game itself.
Yeah, we had a great, we had an amazing tailgate. I think we had like 40, 50 people there at our peak.
Wow.
So much food. We had like food beyond you could, I mean, it was amazing how much we had. And our friends, the Hassan family, who have been season ticket holder for 20 years now, I think they had the option, I think last year, to upgrade their parking lot. And I think your friends, the Clemson guys, got upgraded too at some point.
No, it's all about your parking space in Clemson.
Oh, Mike, private entrance, private exit, right? Maybe like 40 cars in the entire lot. And just the most perfect setting possible. And again, like a 2-minute walk to the stadium, it made a huge difference.
The picture you sent, you was of you guys playing cornhole, and looked like you had a lot of space.
So much space. And we had trees, which is nice too.
Trees are always nice. So give me a couple highlights of what was on the menu.
So we did, of course, we had a bunch of college kids coming. So like it was, the families were, there was actually four families. So you multiply four college boys with all of the roommates and friends and extended people who come based on an invitation. So like, I'm like, all right, we need a baseline of just like dogs and burgers just to like feed the horde.
Yeah, right.
But we had lasagna, we had meatballs, we had every kind of like condiment or not condiments, every kind of like appetizer you could ever imagine. And it was from like, we started, I think, at 11:30 and went straight through 7:30 until we broke down and they went to the game. It was amazing. It was just
Sounds like a great, great college football Saturday. And as you remarked, the weather was spectacular. I mean, it was just beautiful, beautiful day up and down the East Coast.
65 and sunny on a cool, crisp day in State College. You can't beat that, Mike. You can't beat it. Can't. How was your weekend, Mike?
My Saturday was outstanding. I watched all the Nooners at home, including the Clemson-Syracuse game and the equally exciting and impactful Rutgers-Indiana game. Watching Ohio State-Iowa was entertaining from kind of a bus crash, you know, perspective. And then the afternoon, I basically went out and about, enjoyed a friend's party at Patterson Park, walked over to Fells, met up with noted listener Brian Schlater for his birthday and his lovely wife, Marissa, and her sister, Anna. And we all went out in Fells and had a great, great Saturday night.
Sounds lovely.
It was. So most of my knowledge from this week will be from the 12 o'clock window to 4.
Speaking of which, number 2, Ohio State, 54, Iowa 10. I read, Mike, you can find it. It's actually free online on cleveland.com. Doug Lesmerises, I think his name's pronounced. He's a great columnist for cleveland.com. He chose to write his column not about Ohio State after this loss for Iowa, but about Iowa. Mm-hmm. And Kirk Ferentz is doing to that program. And it is the most brutal beat down of, he acknowledges what Ferentz has been for that program. You can make the case he's been the best coach they ever had. But what he's allowing to happen right now for them, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing on offense with Brian Ferentz being there. Did you see, the thing, I will say this too, Ohio State did not play well
no. in
the game and won 54-10.
So they had, Iowa committed 6 turnovers.
Ugh.
6. So you're already the worst offense, you know, in the country, or one of them. Just don't turn the ball over. Can you just do that? Can you just punt? No, they couldn't. Iowa actually had a 10-7 lead in the first quarter after a defensive touchdown. And a friend of mine texted me, and the live in-game spread had gone down from Ohio State, favored by 29 to start the day, down to Ohio State by only 12. I would have bet if there was mobile betting in Maryland at this point, I would have bet every penny in my bank account on Ohio State minus 12. And you saw what the final score was, 54-10, I believe. I heard a great segment on the radio today, basically comparing the situation at Iowa to that of Florida State around Bobby Bowden's final years.
Yeah.
Clearly the game had passed him by. There's no way you can, you know, say that he wasn't the best coach in school history. He's a legend. You know, he's had a successful tenure. He's been important to the program. All those things are true of Kirk Ferentz too. But remember Bowden had his son, Jeff Bowden, as the offensive coordinator, and he was doing a terrible job. And that seems to be the case in Iowa. Nepotism is just a scourge in football on all levels. But it would really be pissing me off if I were an Iowa fan.
And the sad thing is that he's losing all the fans who've supported him for so long.
Right.
You know, and what kills me is like, how, maybe he can see it and doesn't give a shit. Sorry to excuse my language, but it's like, is he just like cashing checks for him and for his son and just doesn't care? Or can he not see it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you doubt that he can't see it because he's a great football coach, right? And I mean, anyone can see it. Someone who had never watched a game of football could watch that game and see it, could watch their offense and see it. So I don't know. It's probably it's probably just stubbornness. You know, he's done it his way for 25 years. I think he's been there. He's 67 years old and his son is the offensive coordinator and he's just going to do it how he wants to do it. No one's going to tell him otherwise. I don't know, but it would be infuriating to be an Iowa fan this season. That's for sure.
I read this week too, last point in this one. I had no idea. Apparently Kirk Ferentz does not use the Iowa sports information department for his PR. He has his own separate PR department.
Really? That's extremely odd.
And that's just like, what is that?
Yeah, right? Exactly. What is that? That's a good question.
Number 5, Clemson 27, number 14, Syracuse 21, a very entertaining game.
Yeah.
Hey, Clemson, good job. I have serious questions about Syracuse's game planning in this game.
So I watched this game from start to finish, and it was a fascinating game for a number of reasons. One, the entire game changed on a very questionable late hit on Clemson in the third quarter. DJ had been benched. The backup came in. It was 3rd and a mile. He was running toward the sideline, and they called a roughing the pass a late hit basically out of bounds on the Syracuse defender. A case could be made for it either way. It seemed a little ticky-tack to me, but after that first down, Clemson just drove down the field, scored, and then they scored again, even though the backup only attempted 4 passes, either attempted or completed only 4 passes. Basically, late in the game, Syracuse could not throw the ball. They either had no confidence in either their quarterback, their receivers, their line. I'm not sure what was going on there. And Tucker, their outstanding running back, only touched the ball a few times in the second half. It was some odd play calling. Then, of course, Dino Babers butchers his clock management toward the end of the game, completely wastes 25 seconds that it turns out would have been probably impactful there on Syracuse's last drive. So it was a nice gutty win for Clemson. It was all in there. It was all in front of them for Syracuse, and but it was a hell of a game.
So Tucker, again, that was curious to me too. Like, why he's your best player?
Yeah,
your best player. You're giving him no touches, and he posted on Instagram after the game or on Twitter. I mean, not like super nice, but he's like, "Hey, I could have done more. I'm healthy."
Yeah.
Which is not great. I get the sense that Syracuse was like, let's just let the clock run down, right? Let's just get out of here. Or like, I don't know what the plan was. It just didn't make any sense. They could have won that game. They could have.
And I just Google Sean Tucker carries in the second half, and the first story that comes up from Syracuse.com. Why did Sean Tucker only have 5 carries? ? Dino Babers says Clemson's defense had, quote, a good scheme. I don't know what kind of scheme you have that prevents him from actually getting carries, but hey, he's the coach. And speaking of that, did you see, I think it was this week, the Georgia Tech game on Thursday night where the quarterback simply ran out of bounds?
That was rough to watch, right?
Yeah, but that was this week, right?
Yep.
Yeah, there were 7 seconds left and Tech was within 1 score. And the quarterback just with double zeros just ran out of bounds and then said, listen, I can't throw the ball 70 or 80 yards. So I just figured we lost and I ran out of bounds. And he came out and said he realized it wasn't quote a good look. So I like that. That's winning football from Georgia Tech.
All right. Next few games here are a bunch of teams that I think you and I would agree, like, we have no idea what to make of, starting with this. LSU 45, number 7, Ole Miss 20. This one was, I'm not going to say shocking, but we've been critical of LSU and Brian Kelly this year. And look, Ole Miss was like number 7 in the country. Are you shocked by, not shocked, are you surprised by this, Mike?
I was not surprised by this for a couple of reasons. One, you got to figure Ole Miss is not going undefeated. The idea that going down to the Death Valley in Baton Rouge is a tough task for anybody. LSU has been improving, but also Ole Miss, they didn't have their best running back. And I think the real key for me was their competition has been extremely light. And so I could kind of see this one coming. I actually picked LSU in our pool. So I am not shocked by it.
But this is the question now, though. What is the future on this season for LSU and for Ole Miss like?
LSU, I think, is going to keep playing hard because they have a new coach and they're building for the future, right? So I think that you're really going to see good football out of LSU. Ole Miss is a class. I mean, they can still have a great year, but they are a program with a ceiling, right? I think the real question is, how long is Lane Kiffin going to accept being in a place with an obvious ceiling? I mean, I don't know. There are not too many marquee jobs that open on the level that he wants to get to, but I don't think, I mean, do you think he can beat the Alabamas and the LSUs consistently while being at Ole Miss? I don't.
Well, nobody can.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Number 8, I believe undefeated TCU, right, Mike?
Yes.
38, number 17, K-State, 28. And I think TCU's has had a grind here so far in the season. One thing I'm picking up on, there's this narrative about TCU keeps injuring key players on the other teams they're playing. And people are wondering if it's intentional. I'm like, I don't think it's intentional.
3 straight weeks they've played a team who's lost its quarterback.
Yeah.
So Kansas State was up 28-10, I believe, in this game. Adrian Martinez, who was having an unbelievable season for K-State, only played one possession, I believe. And then by the second half, K-State was on its 3rd quarterback, and that's really when TCU came storming back. So I have no idea if they're injuring anyone on purpose. I find that storyline amusing. But it's been a – been a hell of a season for TCU, and it was a tough loss for me having K-State as my lock of the week.
Number 10, Oregon 45, number 9, UCLA 30. So drop back, was it week one that Oregon played Georgia?
Yeah, they got destroyed.
And look, imagine you're an Oregon fan. It's a passionate fan base. And I'm sure that was like the end of the world, right? End of the world. Reality is Georgia's awesome. And maybe Oregon's pretty good, just not as good as Georgia, right?
Well, also, it was the first game for a brand new coach and a brand new quarterback for Oregon. You don't want to have that situation against Georgia. Bo Nix has been spectacular since then. He was, I believe, 22 of 28 for 5 touchdowns and no picks in this game against UCLA. And I don't know if you got a chance to see Dan Lanning's comments about him after the game. He was just effusive in his praise for Bo Nix to a level that it seemed he didn't even have to go to that level. Just talking about what a character kid he is and what a leader and what an elite quarterback he is. And so Oregon really, really does seem to be rolling.
They've got to be the favorite in the Pac-12, right?
Yeah, they still have to play Utah, but that is in Oregon, I believe. And yeah, they're the favorite at this point for sure.
Number 11, Okie State, 41. Number 20, Texas, 34. It's always fun to see Texas lose. I have no animus against Texas, right? But like, they're still capital N, capital B, not back.
Did you see the post-game controversy with Sark not singing the song with the alignment?
Eyes of Texas? Yes.
Yes, Eyes of Texas, which he apologized for it and said it won't happen again. It was just an oversight. See, I somehow don't think that would have happened had they won the game.
Right.
But yeah, Texas, boy, they just, no matter what happens to them, they have these losses in the Big 12, and it's they're not inexplicable. They're just, the reality is Texas is not an elite program in that conference, and I fear for them when they go to the SEC.
So on the drive home from Penn State on Sunday, I really enjoyed Barrett Salee and Tom Luganville on College Football Sunday on Sirius XM, and Luganville, I think he's a great sideline guy, but also there's no one more plugged into recruiting than he.
Yeah, that is true.
And there was a bunch of calls in the show about like, hey, what's happening with A&M in Texas here? Like they're sitting in this like gold mine of talent and they can't seem to figure it out. And he had this great explanation that I'd not heard before, where he's like, look, these programs like Oklahoma State or Texas Tech back in the day or TCU or whatever, they're smarter than A&M and Texas, because here's the issue. Texas high school football is so serious that the facilities and the support of these kids from like grade, whatever, 7 through 12, they have some kids who are like finished products by their junior year. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas and A&M are going for those kids. They look the best. Right. But Mike Gundy's taking the kid who's like not quite developed fully yet, knowing he's in a program where that kid won't be an impact player year one or two, but in year three, he's going to be great.
Very interesting.
And it was a fascinating conversation about it. I'm like, oh, that makes complete sense. Like they are crazy in Texas about high school football. Right. And you can see that like, building these kids up into like to win high school football championships without thinking about their next step.
Yeah, right? That is very, very interesting theory. I'd not heard that before. And I do love those two guys. What time does their show come on Sunday? Do you know?
So it starts at 9 a.m. and it goes to noon, but then it repeats the entire day.
Okay. And Aaron allowed you to listen to this on the car ride home?
Oh, Mike, I had earbuds on. Believe me.
Okay. All right. That makes a lot more sense.
But it was a great conversation. Number 16, Penn State 45, Minnesota 17, the game I was at in theory. To be fair, Minnesota with no Tanner Morgan handicapped them enormously.
Yes.
For Penn State, I think like after getting humbled in their last game against Michigan, a very nice comeback win for Penn State. Clifford played very well and sets up whatever this week against Ohio State. We'll see.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck this weekend. But Minnesota, what a fall from grace. And my God, the Big Ten West, ugh, atrocious.
I mean, it's Illinois, right?
Yeah, they're in the driver's seat right now.
Mike, for you, the next two games, Maryland 31, Northwestern 24. First of all, hey, Maryland, nice win, but give him 24 to Northwestern, Mike.
Yeah, not good. Watched the very end of this game on my phone at one of the bars in Fells Point. Denby, this running back from Maryland, had a huge game and a very nice run there at the end. But yes, that game never should have been that close. That was a little embarrassing. But still, Maryland 6-2, having an outstanding season. By the way, there's still a scenario where Northwestern could win the Big Ten West at 4-8. I just want to put that out there. Some guy on Twitter worked all that out. Everything would have to go right, but it's just out there. That's what you're dealing with the Big Ten West. And then in Piscataway, gorgeous day in Piscataway. Indiana returns the opening kickoff for a touchdown, 7-0 with 14 minutes and 50 seconds left in the first quarter. They went on to get 7 points the rest of the entire game. Their quarterback, Connor Basilak, is atrocious. They have no skill players at all on offense. They've reverted completely to the Indiana of the Tom Allen really first year. There's not much he can do. They just have no talent whatsoever. They have to make a change at quarterback. They're going nowhere with Basilak, but they don't really have any prospects behind him. Tim, do you realize that this was Rutgers snapped a 22-game home conference losing streak. Home. They had not won a home game, home Big Ten game in over 1,000 days, 20-plus games. And that's what you need to snap a streak like that. You need the Hoosiers to come on in.
So you've given your kind of screed on Indiana. I have to ask you. So, again, Maryland is 6-2.
Yes.
But what is your take on the current state of Maryland football?
It's outstanding. They've improved every year under Mike Locksley, and they have a lot of talent on offense. And I think that Locksley has shown he can recruit probably better than any Maryland coach who's been there since the early days of Fridge. I think Fridge had some, because he had experiences like an NFL coordinator, he was able to get some talented offensive guys there. But since then, Locksley's done the best job of recruiting. And look, as we've talked about many, many times, Maryland could win two more ball games. And if you're Maryland and you have an 8-4 season, that is a terrific season. So I'm bullish on the Terps this year.
What's the remaining schedule? They have us, right?
Yeah, they have Penn State. You can give me a second to call it up. They have they have at least two winnable games. I believe they still have Rutgers. But give me a second. I'll call it up. You can talk about something else in the interim.
I'll say this. I think Maryland is an interesting test case in terms of a program where I think Locksley is like a great, great pick for that program.
Yeah.
And there's not many great, great. It was Fridge was like the ultimate, right?
Yeah. No, Bobby Ross was very good too, though.
Bobby Ross. Right. I'm really interested to see, like, and also too, for Maryland and other programs in this conference, when UCLA and USC come on board and they just dismantle the divisions.
Yes.
That'll be a game changer.
Very, very important to see what kind of scheduling format they go to. You're completely right. And we just had a bit of news. They announced they were not doing anything with the division next year. So the same format next year, and then they're going to blow everything up and change it in 2024. So that will be very interesting. Terps have 4 games left at Wisconsin. That is a winnable game. They need a healthy Talia though. At Penn State, that's going to be a big challenge, obviously. Home to Ohio State, that's a big fat L. And then home to Rutgers. So you got to figure that's a win. So Maryland could easily win 8 games this year.
I think at least 7-5, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mike, the top 25. You ready? We're doing the coaches poll this week. Drop from rankings, Texas, I love it, and Mississippi State. Others receiving votes, Texas, Liberty, Maryland, Washington, Oregon State, Baylor. Who else here? We got Coastal Carolina, UCF, and Boise State with one vote. 25 Carolina, South Carolina, 24 Tulane, 23 NC State, 22 K-State, 21 North Carolina.
I love to see Tulane in there, the Green Wave. I toured their stadium once when I was in New Orleans like 2 or 3 years ago. They have a great little stadium. I don't know what the capacity is, maybe like 30,000 or something, right on their pretty campus on the outskirts of New Orleans. It's there. I like that program.
20 LSU, 19 Cincinnati, 18 Illinois, 17 Kentucky, 16 Syracuse.
The Cuse, I was impressed with. The coaching didn't seem to be their best asset, but they have a lot of guys who played hard, and their defense actually impressed me too. Interesting game for them this week with Notre Dame coming in.
15 UCLA, 14 Utah, 13 Penn State, 12 Ole Miss, 11 USC.
Interesting that Utah, UCLA, USC all kind of ranked around each other. Doesn't really bode well, I think, for a Pac-12 team getting into the playoff.
No, they're tough. 10, Wake Forest. I love Wake Forest at 10. 9, Oklahoma State. 8, Oregon. 7, TCU. 6, Alabama, Mike.
6, I think that's funny. Wake Forest is really a very talented team, especially on offense. I watched a lot of their beatdown of Boston College this week. Sam Hartman's an excellent quarterback. They have very good receivers. That's a dangerous team.
Top 5, Clemson, 4, Michigan, 3, Tennessee, 2, Ohio State, Georgia, 1. Georgia, 43 first place votes, Ohio State, 17, Tennessee, 2, Michigan, 1, Clemson, nothing. I think in the past, I'm trying to think, the past 5 years, this is the most fluid top 5 I can recall. I think all of these teams, minus Georgia, have flaws.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do you agree, Mike?
It's tough. A little bit tough to see if Ohio State has any flaws. Simply because, again, they haven't really played any tough competition. But you look at their schedule. I mean, we'll see how they play this week at Beaver Stadium. That's going to be their hardest game to date. We'll see. I think we'll learn a little bit more about them. But what I've seen of them, I don't really see a weakness in Ohio State either.
So I'm going to text my our listeners and good friends, Joe Borzen and I'm blanking on another name. I'm sorry.
There, I can see he's a very good friend of yours.
Yeah. The one question I have, and what killed Penn State against Michigan was the running game.
Yep.
Right. And I'm just not sure. I've heard that things are not as great with the Ohio State. Like, have you heard about like a star Ohio State running back this year?
Well, they have that the kid Henderson, right? But it's almost like they don't need to run it
because they're such a passing game. Yeah,
they have such a potent passing attack.
So we'll see. We'll get there later. Mike, who do you think is the best team in the country?
I would have to say Georgia, followed closely by Ohio State, followed by Alabama because they have Bryce Young and Nick Saban. That would be my top three.
Yeah,
very controversial, isn't it?
I think Georgia is the clear answer, right?
Well, they have Florida this week. They should. We'll see how tough a test that is. But as you said, we'll get to that.
All right, Mike, real quick. We live in an era where universities are stupidly handing out huge contracts to coaches for no reason whatsoever, except that, like, they feel like backing in the corner or whatever.
To coaches, but not to other members of the staff who work at these universities.
Real quick. How about Jimbo at A&M? 3-4. We had 3 players apparently kicked out of the team.
Yep.
Smoking pot on like game day in the locker room.
And see, I didn't hear the reason. Was that the reason?
Yes, apparently.
Wow. Jimbo's press conference after the loss to South Carolina was kind of sad. He kept saying how close they were. Close to what? Being able to beat South Carolina? I mean, he's like, oh, we're so close. Now, I understand. What are you going to say? You're not just going to sit there and say, we suck, we're terrible, I'm stealing your money, Texas A&M. But to say you're close, ooh, that's got it great if you're an Aggies fan.
And they're paying him like $90 million.
The buyout is a full, it's a full buy, his contract is fully guaranteed. They have to pay him 80 plus million if they wanted to get rid of him.
Again, I think the reality is they've had either one or two 10 win seasons in the past 20 years.
Yeah. Unrealistic expectation, but you got to, they have all the money in the world and they're in Texas. It's hard for the average fan to understand why they're not succeeding.
But you've been there, Mike.
Yes.
And based on town optics, can you explain why, maybe?
I don't quite understand that question. Based on talent optics?
No. The town itself.
Oh, the town itself. Yeah, not the best college town that I've ever been to. I'll say that for sure. The stadium is impressive. The fans are impressive. The fans were very, very nice. And the traditions are great with the bonfire and the cheer thing, the yell ceremony, whatever the hell they call it, the night before that we went to. And as Clemson fans, my friends were welcomed in. We had a great time, but definitely not the prettiest or coolest college town that I've ever been to. Not even in the top half.
I mean, compared to like, again, Austin, they have own problems there, but like.
Oh, it's, you can't compare it in any way, shape or form to Austin.
So good luck, Jimbo. How about Mario Cristobal at Miami? So this is not about Mario in my mind. This is about, let's face it, Miami and facilities is a problem, and that stadium is a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke.
You know what else is a joke, though? 8 turnovers for the Miami offense. 8. I don't think I've ever seen an NFL or like a major college game with that many turnovers from one team.
Just a mess.
Yeah.
A mess in Miami. And they need to confront that one issue before they get over the hump. I think a place like Pitt, like, I don't love that Pitt does not have Pitt Stadium anymore. I've been there, Mike. Have you been to Pitt Stadium or no?
I never have been to Pitt Stadium. No, I'd only been to a game at Heinz Field.
But like, even so, now it's like, whatever. If you're a student, it's like not convenient, but it's like, whatever, 15, 20 minutes to get to the stadium. Okay. In Miami, it's a 45-minute at least drive to get to, what's it called?
Hard Rock Stadium or Hard Rock Cafe Stadium or something.
And there's not a passionate fan base in the first place.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The DNA of the Pittsburgh sports fan and the Miami sports fan are quite different.
Yeah.
So whereas, you know, Pitt can kind of get away with playing at an NFL stadium, they're in Pittsburgh. You know, that is a diehard sports town where Miami, let's just face it, is not. So the incentive for their fans and their student body to go 45 minutes on a blazing hot Saturday to see them play Middle Tennessee or Duke is not there.
Next one, Steve Sarkisian. I know it's very early here. It's a very different kind of situation than the previous two coaches. This is not about Sarkisian. It's about the job again. I just don't know what Texas's plan is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's their plan?
Their plan is to go to the SEC and get a lot of money and continue their fall toward mediocrity. I mean, how are they going to get better going to the SEC? That's what I don't understand.
And I feel like I should have included, too, the guy Venables at Oklahoma, because they're in the same boat, right?
They're in the same boat, but he's a first-year coach. I think we got to give him a break. And I want to add, too, is your list done? I have two coaches I'd like to talk about real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
James Franklin and Jim Harbaugh. So there was an incident, of course, at halftime of the Michigan-Penn State game where apparently for some reason in Michigan Stadium, both teams use the same tunnel to get into the locker room. There was a fracas at halftime and James Franklin didn't like it. And Jim Harbaugh did not like what James Franklin said about it. And I want to read you a quote from a story in The Athletic that I read about this incident today that very much amused me. Quote, "All they've got to do is walk into their locker room," Harbaugh said. "You saw pretty clearly that they completely stopped and weren't letting us get up to the tunnel. It seemed like such a sophomore ploy to try and keep us out of our locker room. It looked like Franklin was the ringleader of the whole thing, end quote. Then this is my favorite paragraph. Videographers captured footage of the teams yelling back and forth, and Michigan players and staffers accused Penn State players of throwing peanut butter and jelly sandwiches during the exchange. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches being thrown at halftime. Harbaugh saw no need to institute a policy as a result of the incident. Quote, I've got bigger fish to fry than worry about that kind of whining, he said. Hilarious. Just the whole article just amused me. I wanted to share it with our readers or our listeners in case some of you don't get The Athletic, which is a great publication. I highly recommend it. But throwing peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at halftime of a game against Michigan, that's what we're dealing with here, folks.
Do you think that those two like text sometimes like about stuff?
Who, Harbaugh and Franklin?
Yeah.
No, I get the feeling they really don't like each other. Well, A, because I don't think Harbaugh has a lot of friends. Remember, just in general, you know, he doesn't seem like a friendly guy. He's kind of an introvert, where Franklin strikes me as a type of guy who wants everyone to like him, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think he probably texts with a bunch of people and he probably has a wide range of friendships, but I don't think Harbaugh is one of them.
Interesting. Last one, Mel Tucker. Oh, $90 million contract, Mike.
For one good season?
It's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah, major problem. Michigan State is terrible this year. Very, very bad. But they did get a win over Wisconsin, I guess, 2 weeks ago, which was a nice win for them.
All right, games of the week, Mike. I'll start with this. Number 2, Ohio State. Number 13, Penn State. Noon on Fox. The line came out on Sunday, I think it was 13.5 for Ohio State. I was like, told my friends, I was like, hey, like they're going to cover, no question about it. The only thing that gives me any hope whatsoever is, again, I don't think Ohio State has the running game that Michigan did. That being said, it's going to take a epic performance by Penn State and a very poor performance by Ohio State for this to turn out any other way than a blowout. I think Ohio State's just, they are, Penn State's not a bad team, but they're not Ohio State. That's the reality.
Correct. That the last sentence you said is just something every Penn State fan has to just get used to. Yeah. They're not a bad team. They're a good team, but they're nowhere near Ohio State. Now, it's weird that this game is a nooner, don't you think? I mean, I'd give Penn State a better chance if it was a night game. A couple things working for Penn State's favor. This is only the second road game for Ohio State. And as you said, the rest of their 7 games have been really very light. They've had a very, very light schedule. The spread jumped up 2 points immediately when it opened at 13.5, because now it's 15.5. Ugh. That means, the betting public seriously likes Ohio State. And I hate to say it, Timmy, but I'd probably go Ohio State if I was betting on this game.
So we shall see. People are grumbling about it not being a night game, but it's like the Big Ten is trying to turn the new into a thing. So that's a thing. Okay. Yeah.
And all that's going to change once the new contract starts. It'll be interesting to see how it works out because, you know, NBC will have a night game. CBS will have the 3:30 game. And it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, I'm sure it's already written the contract, but I don't know about how, you know, which network is going to get which game.
This one is fascinating. Notre Dame unranked at number 16, Syracuse, noon ABC. Notre Dame's Notre Dame, whatever. Syracuse coming off a very disappointing loss.
Yeah, an emotional loss. Very interesting game. I agree with you. Because you have Syracuse at 6-1. They're having a great season. As I said, there was a lot I liked watching Syracuse. I was impressed with their defense. They have talent in Tucker. You know, Schrader can run, but he couldn't throw when he needed a throw at the end of the game. Obviously, Clemson has a much better defense than Notre Dame, but you just have no idea how a team like Syracuse is going to react emotionally coming off that loss, right? They could be, you know, playing great. This could be, you know, they're 6-1. They could end this season 8-4, you know? That's how it could go. But the Cuse is a 3-point favorite in the Dome at noon on Saturday over the Irish.
That's a very interesting line, isn't it?
Yeah, it opened Syracuse -1.5 and jumped to 3.
Number 9, Okie State at number 22, Kansas State, 330 FS1. This is the homework this week, Mike. And not because of Okie State, because of K-State. Have you watched K-State at all this year, Mike?
No. Yet they were my lock of the week last week. Depends if they get Martinez back. I mean, he's played all season without throwing an interception. It's been spectacular. 5-2, and they're favored by a point and a half in the Little Apple in Manhattan.
This game, for the first time in the history of the podcast, this is extra credit game, Mike. Extra credit. Northwestern at Iowa. ESPN2. I will be watching this game because I have to watch this game. This will be, either will be like 55-44 or 3-2.
5-4.
Yes.
Iowa is a 10.5 point favorite, double digits. How are they going to score double digit points? The over under is 37.5. Northwestern, as we said, 1-6 overall, but yet not mathematically eliminated from that Big Ten West race. And hey, neither is Iowa. So good luck watching that one. It's on at 3:30, opposite Nebraska, Illinois. That's another 3:30 game. A lot of good football being played in the Big Ten at 3:30 on Saturday.
Wait, straight up, Mike, who's your pick to win the game, Northwestern or Iowa?
I have to go with Iowa.
Really?
I don't think they'll cover. I've watched a lot of Northwestern this year, and they are putrid.
Iowa's bad, though, man.
Iowa's very bad, but Iowa's defense is not bad, and Northwestern's bad on both sides of the football. So using that logic, I'm taking the Hawkeyes.
I think I heard today on the Cleveland.com Buckeyes podcast that despite last week's results, Iowa's pass defense is still ranked number one in the country.
That's unbelievable if that's true.
Number 19, Kentucky at number 3, Tennessee, 7 p.m. ESPN. Also a fascinating game here, Mike.
Very much. Now, Tennessee, extremely lucky /smart to schedule Tennessee Martin after the Alabama game. There was no hangover. I mean, it was 7-7 in the first quarter, and then they just, of course, opened up a big can of whoop-ass, and I think they scored like 40-plus in the first half. But Kentucky is a good physical team coming into Neyland. Tennessee, 12.5-point favorites. You have to see if – I assume Will Levis is playing, but I think Kentucky can give them a game. And for Tennessee, you can't get overconfident, and you can't be looking past this one because I believe that – they have Georgia either next week or in 2 weeks. So I think it's 2 weeks, a week from Saturday, they have Georgia. So can't be looking past the Wildcats if you're the Vols.
One of my favorite, I mean, top five rivalries of the year, underrated rivalries of the year. Talk about in-state hatred. Michigan State at number 4, Michigan, 7:30 ABC. This game, I mean, Sparty hates Michigan, Mike. Hates. Yeah. And I know Sparty sucks this year and
they do.
Tucker's not doing great, but like, I just, there's a 1% chance they make this game interesting, right?
Yeah. The spread is 22.5. I would take Sparty plus all those points just because it is a rivalry game. I've just been so impressed with Michigan though all year. As I said, I've seen them a lot for some reason, just coincidentally. And they just are such a consistent team on both sides of the ball. But you're right. It's a great rivalry. I love the rivalries in which it's Michigan is Michigan State's number one rival, but Michigan State is not Michigan's number one rival.
Yes.
It makes the underdog hate them even more. So that should be a fun one at night.
Our late game, I picked Stanford unranked at number 12, UCLA, 10:30 ESPN for the brave late night watchers, Mike. I don't trust UCLA coming off a tough loss to Oregon last week, and Stanford's just Stanford, and this is the Pac-12. So in theory, Stanford could win this game, right?
Stanford's been showing some signs of life lately. You know, they beat Notre Dame, which was a shocking result, and they had a very close, entertaining game against Oregon State. UCLA 16.5 point favorites, kind of a big number.
Mike, our picks last week were what?
Oh, they were both. Yours was far, far worse than mine. You took Indiana plus 3.5 at Rutgers. And that was, oh my God, Indiana's They're one of the worst teams in the Power Five. It pains me to say that. And I took Kansas State, and they were up, to, as I said, 28-10. They lost not one but two quarterbacks. So I'm basically giving myself a bye, although not in the standings. I am 3-5. You are 2-6.
Oh, 2-6?
Yeah. Are you excited about that?
I thought it was 1-7. So
no, like, well, hey, look, today's your lucky day.
Bobby hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
The Mike Unger 50-50 possible lot probable loser of the week.
Please hang up and try again.
Tim, for this week's Lock of the Week, we are going to Louisville, Kentucky, a city I visited earlier this year for the second time. Lovely place. A lot of fun stuff going on in Louisville. We Tozered Cardinal Stadium or Papa John Stadium or whatever the hell it's called these days. It's out right, very close to Churchill Downs. Anyway, Wake Forest comes in at 6-1 with an offense that's just clicking on all cylinders. They're only 4.5-point favorites on the road against an up-and-down Louisville team that's 4-3, 2-1 at home. I will take Sam Hartman and that Wake offense minus 4.5.
Level of confidence, Mike?
I would say 8. I actually thought about it for more than 30 seconds before the podcast.
I will take Notre Dame to cover versus Cuse, Mike.
Plus the 3, huh? That's an interesting pick, and That's going to be it's just, isn't it just going to be odd seeing those Notre Dame uniforms and helmets in the Carrier Dome?
Ugh, it'd be weird. Yes.
It's going to be very weird. So interesting pick. That's a nooner.
Mike, your weekend of college football is what?
I'm not quite sure. I have a lot kind of up in the air this weekend, but I will definitely be watching the noon games at home. I'll get that whole noon window up, and then we'll see what the rest of the day brings. Both Indiana and Maryland have buys this week.
Ooh, it's tough for you, Mike.
Nah, it's kind of nice. It gives you a little more freedom to get out and about and enjoy the fall weather. But yeah, I'll be watching a ton of games at noon, and then we'll see.
What are your thoughts on the baseball playoffs, Mike?
Oh, I'm completely checked out of the baseball playoffs. First of all, why are they not having any games for a week? And then starting it on a Friday, it makes absolutely no sense. I don't agree with that. And it's very difficult to know who to root for between the Yankees and the Astros and then the Phillies. No offense to your wife, the lovely Erin. And I have a lot of friends and family from Philadelphia who are Phillies fans, but I find them other Phillies fans to be a bit obnoxious. So I was rooting for Manny and the Padres. So now that they're out, it's going to be difficult for me to watch.
So it's Astros Phillies, right?
Yes, Astros Phillies with Trey Mancini on the Astros. So I'll definitely be rooting for him. Is your whole household very much into it with the Phillies?
Yeah, I try not to be grumpy about it because like the issue is I can't talk about it. It's
so it doesn't sound like your efforts to not be grumpy are working very well. Right. Probably in that or other categories.
All right, Mike, thanks again, and there's one thing to say.
Pachas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFA podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit intelligentcollegefootball.com.